Former President Barack Obama was back in Chicago yesterday for his first major public appearance since leaving the White House 3 months ago.
The single most important thing I can do is to help in any way I can prepare the next generation of leadership to take up the baton.
WBEZ Chicago reporter Tony Arnold fills us in on what Obama said and what's next for the former president. We'll also discuss what a nursing shortage in Illinois could mean for our healthcare system.
Basically, the nurses keep the hospital going, keep things going, daily routines, you know, shift on, shift off. There is no way that you could function without nursing in our hospitals.
But first, we check in with the organizers of today's Women's March on Springfield. Thousands are expected to rally in the state capitol in support of abortion rights, raising the minimum wage, and other progressive issues. That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned. Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Lawmakers arrived back in Springfield yesterday to kick off the final weeks of the spring session. Today, thousands of people across the state are expected to gather at the Capitol building for an Illinois Women's March on Springfield. Nearly 100 organizations, dozens of Democratic politicians have endorsed the march, with which organizers say is a rally for women's rights, including equal pay and abortion, as well as efforts to raise the minimum wage and draw attention to the harm caused by the ongoing budget impasse. Senate President John Cullerton and Comptroller Susana Mendoza, along with several Democratic candidates for governor, are expected to address the crowd, which is gathering right now. And one of the co-chairs of the march joins us from where people will be gathering outside the State House. Tracy Baim is the publisher of Windy City Times, a longtime LGBTQ activist based in Chicago. Tracy, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Sorry.
That's okay, Tracy. I know you're outside right now. Tracy, so there's about 100 or even more than 100 organizations marching today. How did all of this come together?
Well, kind of came out of the January 21st as well as November elections. We felt like it was time to coalesce across a wide range of issues. I've been involved in marches. They're usually single issue, like the Marriage Equality March 4 years ago. This was a time where we felt we could bring together a coalition of a wide range of groups that didn't always necessarily agree with everything on everybody's agenda, but that we felt like there could be a large pressure put, not just today, but also in advance of today and after today. We'll be pushing people to lobby directly to their representatives and senators.
And so what is it, because as you mentioned, oftentimes these are single issue marches. What to you is the message that you want to be sending today in particular?
I want to send the message that organizations and individuals are coming across party lines as well as individual issue lines to work together so that people that care about gun safety and immigration are working alongside the unions and women's issues. This is going to have a profound effect on the elections next year, both in Illinois as well as across the country. It's also going to, we hope, put a lot of pressure on Springfield here to actually get some stuff done. We are at an impasse in Springfield on the budget. We're not under no impression that a march is going to help move that to happen tomorrow. But we want people to understand that we will travel, we will come to Springfield, we will pressure our elected officials directly until something happens in Illinois to fix this, whether it's going to be an election or whether it's going to be something that happens this spring in Springfield.
Is there something you think that, is there a message you think you can send that people in these individual groups, whether it's the ACLU or the Sergeant Shriver Center on Poverty Law or the Illinois Federation of Teachers, Lambda Legal, all of these groups that are taking part today, is there a particular message you think that can be sent to lawmakers to move them from this budget stalemate?
Well, I do think that they're going to start seeing challengers in their districts running for office in a way that maybe hasn't happened in a generation. People are really excited to run for office if their elected officials aren't going to move along. And also that if you care about one issue, you're going to be paying attention to another issue. All of us are really paying attention to immigration issues, for example, in ways that I think some people really didn't think were interconnected before. So we're really excited about the potential partnerships that it's not really just about today. It really is for the long haul that people are working together in ways that they haven't ever before. So that's the message to lawmakers is you can't pick us off one at a time. People that in the past might not have seen the connection between HB 40, a women's agenda issue, and Fight for 15. Well, we're woke up, as they say, and people are caring about all those issues when they're lobbying. So we have, you know, we have a bus coming down from a high school in Chicago, for example. They're going to focus on youth homeless issues, including the ones that Shriver Center is pushing for on SNAP benefits. And we have other groups that have buses from Women and Children First. They're going to focus a lot on the women's agenda. SEIU has three buses coming down that are going to focus on the union issues. But we're all going to gather together at the start of this to show that we're together, that we're very strong.
And Tracy, what's the plan? What's the idea of where you guys are going to be today?
So today at noon, we're at the Lincoln statue for about a 45-minute rally with various speakers. Then we're going to march around the Capitol complex, and then everybody's going to go inside to lobby. Some people have already actually had meetings with their legislators this morning, and then people are going to, you know, drop off. We have pink postcards that people could write their top legislative agenda on and hand deliver to their elected officials. And then there's a 2:30 rally in the rotunda with the Democratic candidates for governor, with a few other speakers, and then folks are going to head back, and then we're going to really, you know, push folks to focus on their legislative districts, go into their, you know, when the state reps and senators have meetings, office hours in their districts, to go meet with them in person. In person is the most effective way to lobby your legislator. They know that very few people actually show up to the issues they care about. So if you show up, you represent a lot of voices that aren't there.
Tracy, you mentioned HB 40. That's been an issue that has been controversial these past couple of days about access to abortion in terms of paying for abortion, as well as there's sort of two pieces of this. I wonder if you have a particular message you want to send to Governor Rauner about that today.
Well, he is risking a lot by going against this. He ran on an agenda where a lot of moderates felt like he was going to be moderate on social issues. This is going to be a line in the sand for a lot of moderates if he does go forward and veto this, if it passes. It's going to really affect the elections next year in a way towards the Democrats, because this is not an issue women are going to compromise on anymore. I know a lot of progressive women and LGBT people who voted for Rauner thinking that he, you know, believed him on his moderate stance on social issues, and this is going to be proof that he's not. It's really a really important message HB 40 sends to the electorate on the issue of choice. The issue of federal money going towards it, we know that federal dollars directly do not go towards abortion. This would help women who are having subsidized health care get health care. So if you want to draw a line to that and make it about that, I believe it's an incorrect linkage, and most voters now are much more sophisticated and smarter than that. And the other issue is, if Roe v. Wade does come down at the federal level, this is our last line of defense to keep abortion legal, safe and legal in Illinois. So we know that this is a huge issue for the people that are coming here today. I think HB 40, the ERA, and the labor issues, especially Fight for 15, are some of the top reasons that people are coming to Springfield.
That's Tracy Baim. She's co-chair of the Illinois Women March on Springfield. Tracy, thanks for being with us. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you. Bye-bye.
We're going to check in later on the hour on how that march is going, as people are expected to rally at noon. So we'll follow up at the end of the hour, at the end of the program, to see how that's going. Former President Barack Obama was back in Chicago yesterday to give his first public address since leaving office. He spoke at the University of Chicago, a homecoming in several ways. WBEZ Chicago political reporter Tony Arnold was there with us. He's on the line with us now from WBEZ. Hey, Tony, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Hey, Nyla, good to be here.
So we've all seen the headlines. Everyone's seen probably all the pictures of President Obama taking a vacation since leaving office 3 months ago. How did he seem yesterday? Did he seem well-rested?
Yeah, my impression was he seemed very relaxed. He was on stage at this auditorium on the campus of the University of Chicago, and it was, I don't know, it's not like it's a huge arena. It's maybe 300 people in the crowd there. And he just, granted, you know, it's not like he's new to being on stage anymore, but, he seemed, you know, it wasn't, there was no necktie, you know, shirt, top button unbuttoned, just seemed relaxed and comfortable with, kind of that space that he was in, given that, you know, he hasn't been seen now or been on stage in 3 months.
In a couple of months.
And
yeah,
every day for 8 years.
So let's play a little bit, a portion of what President Obama said yesterday. Particularly, he talked about the divisions that he's seeing in our country today.
because of changes in the media, we now have a situation in which everybody's listening to people who already agree with them and are further and further reinforcing their own realities to the neglect of a common reality that allows us to have a healthy debate and then try to find common ground and actually move solutions forward. And so, you know, when I said in 2004 that there were no red states or blue states, there are the United States of America, that was an aspirational comment. But I think it's... And it's one, by the way, that I still believe in the sense that when you talk to individuals one-on-one, people, there's a lot more that people have in common than divides them. But obviously it's not true when it comes to our politics and our civic life. And maybe more pernicious is the fact that people just aren't involved. They get cynical and they give up. And as a consequence, we have some of the lowest voting rates of any advanced democracy, and low participation rates then translate into a further gap between who's governing us and what we believe. The only folks who are going to be able to solve that problem are going to be young people, the next generation.
That's former President Obama yesterday at the University of Chicago, his first public address since leaving office. WBEZ Chicago's Tony Arnold was there in the audience. Tony, we heard everybody laughing. I wonder what the reaction, the response was to hearing what has always been President Obama's signature message, that we are united as a country. I wonder how people reacted to that, given the deep divisions we've seen in the past couple of months.
Well, I think the people that it was a hand selected crowd. It was not open to the general public, and people in the crowd were related to education in one way or another, whether they were instructors or teachers at the University of Chicago or neighboring.
Where they passed out tickets, right, to neighboring schools and universities.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's some students in the crowd, and then six. Young people on stage, some of them students, some of them, one of them was a recent graduate. Point being that a lot of the way that this was talked about and received in the crowd was, I felt like it was a very friendly crowd to the message for one. And then two is that, it was kind of like a preaching to the choir type of situation where the people, if he's talking about a lack of engagement, it wasn't from the crowd. The
right. It wasn't from those people.
It's to the people who are, you know, going to be ended up seeing that on TV or whatever. And so they were, a lot of this was top level type of conversation about how do we reach other people that wouldn't be here, that aren't in this room. And I think that's the challenge. You know, he addressed a few different ways that are blocking that message from getting out. There wasn't a solid resolution where, okay, we can take this message now to these groups and then move on. In fact, one of the panelists there said that he's doing some graduate studies work on day laborers in Chicago and trying to get to know.
But he asked him about immigration, right? He said, what do you say about people coming out of the shadows?
Exactly. And how do I get them to trust me if I'm trying to understand where they came from, what they're thinking, what they're afraid of, that kind of thing? How do I get them to trust me if, I'm knocking on their doors or talking to them on the street? That a lot of people right now, and it's not necessarily new, he said, but it's a little bit more magnified now, given the new tone of the way immigration is being talked about, he said it's just having a hard time building trust. And Obama's answer was basically just put away the clipboard for a little bit and just you know talk to them for a while on your own. Get somebody that they know to introduce you, so that you know there's ways there's very basic ways. But really, what he was getting at is going back to Obama's
roots, right, as a community organizer.
And you know, introducing himself to new people to you know, advance the change that they want.
Tony, no mention of President Trump by name?
No mention of Trump by name, no mention of real critics by name or specific critics. You know, I've seen Obama talk about how much he appreciated that George W. Bush didn't criticize Obama during his presidency, so it sounds like Obama's doing the same thing for Trump. Very little mention of that. The three issues that mainly Obama focused on in terms of, like, issues that he sees, I think, where he's going now in the next phase of his career, in terms of passing the baton to you know, the young people of the young leaders of tomorrow. He mentioned in particular the amount of money in politics. He wasn't particularly happy about that. Gerrymandering of legislative districts, and how media is operating right now.
Right, right. We heard that.
You're aligned with either Fox News or MSNBC, and there's nothing in the middle.
Tony, we just have about less than a minute left, but just quickly, what's next for President Obama?
You know, he said that he's writing a book, and he, in particular, he said as he's thinking about that book, he's been thinking about the only election he lost, which is to Bobby Rush, the congressman from
Rush.
Outside
mm-hmm.
of Chicago
mm-hmm.
in 2000. He lost in the primary there. And otherwise, you know, he didn't really say much else. I kind of am wondering if there's going to be more events like this on the horizon for him, where he's trying to moderate some panels or that kind of thing, or just giving speeches. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess we'll see. Right. This
yep.
was the first of what we will probably see from many appearances from former President Obama. WBEZ Chicago Public Media's political reporter, Tony Arnold. Tony, as always, thanks for being with me.
Yeah, thanks.
Talking about the nursing shortage in Illinois. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. By the way, if you follow us on Twitter, our handle is 21STShow. We live tweet during the program. The more background context on what we're talking about when we're not on air, you can follow us for the latest in Illinois news. Our handle is 21STShow. One in three people who work in healthcare in the U.S. are nurses. They make up the largest share of healthcare professionals. And since the number of Americans with health insurance has increased under the Affordable Care Act, there's been an even greater need for the critical care nurses provide. But there aren't nearly enough nurses to meet that demand. The state of Illinois estimates that by 2020, there will be a nursing shortage of 21,000 people. Joining us on the line now to talk about this issue is Julie Mueller. She's the director of recruitment at OSF Healthcare. They operate 11 hospitals in Illinois and Michigan, as well as primary care and specialist services. Julie's on the line from Peoria. Julie, thanks for being with me.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Julie, what have you seen in recent years in terms of the demand for nurses? Where are they needed most in hospital systems?
Well, I think from a nursing perspective, there are more choices and opportunities for nurses than there ever have been before. We see diverse work environments. It's changing where you can go, the bedside, ambulatory, home health, call centers, traveling, leadership opportunities. The population of our patients is changing, too. The complexity and acuity is much higher. So we're seeing nurses have a lot of opportunity to go in many diverse directions with their careers. And as a result, that spreads out your nursing candidates.
And what happens when there aren't enough nurses at hospitals or in primary care facilities?
Well, I think you have to pay close attention to your staffing ratios, and we do a lot of that at OSF across all of our facilities. We're looking at how we are going to care for our patient populations and how we ensure that we are staffed appropriately to cover that. And one creative mechanism we've used is our CRT team, which is basically a PRN pool within our healthcare system that provides nursing staffing to our facilities who maybe have a day of need or a FMLA 12-week need, something more short-term, so that we're able to be creative and provide staffing across our organization to be able to care for our patients and definitely meet our quality and safety goals.
And so what you all actually do is at OSF, it sounds like, is you are creating ways to sort of pool resources to share them across the system. Is that a lot of what you've had to do?
Absolutely. We have to be smart about our staffing initiatives and be sure that we're able to leverage across our work units within our facilities, and both inside inpatient nursing and bedside. We have to make sure that we are not only have robust recruiting efforts and we're able to attract those new grads, but we're also creative about how we go out and ask for nurses who are ready to re-enter the workforce.
Yeah, what kind of recruiting tools are you, how are you trying to entice more people to come work for you? I imagine that's what you probably spend a lot of your time doing.
Every day. Our goal is really to share what it means to be a nurse at OSF and all of the diverse opportunities that are out there that people don't always understand that a large healthcare system can provide. You may enter in bedside nursing and you may decide after a few years you want to go into leadership role, or you want to continue your education, or you want to check out the ambulatory space, or you want to provide nursing opportunities in our home care setting, and really explaining to nurses what's out there, and also making sure you tailor your recruitment efforts to the diversity of the population, making sure you understand what a new grad wants may look different than what a 5- and 10-year nurse want, and really paying attention to engaging our nurses in providing our care. At the end of the day, the patient is the most important to us, and RRNs really help drive our patient care and make those decisions on how we care for our patients. And that input is important, and that's what our nurses want to be a part of.
I'm speaking with Julie Mueller. She's the director of recruitment from OSF Healthcare. She's on the line from Peoria. I want to bring two more people into this conversation. Joining us from Edwardsville is Andy Griffin. He's the Assistant Dean of Graduate Programs at Southern Illinois University School of Nursing. On the line from Chicago, Dan Frykowski is the President of the American Nursing Association of Illinois. Andy, Dan, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us as well.
Thank you.
Dan, can I ask you, as president of the American Nursing Association, as you're listening to Julie talk about these issues, Julie mentioned something about the patient needs changing and becoming more acute. Can you explain that to us in terms of what we're seeing within our healthcare system in terms of the need for nurses?
Sure. So as the community has changed and as so much technology has come to healthcare, those patients in acute care hospital settings are really much sicker than they were years ago because so much more is done in a home care or ambulatory outpatient setting. So as the demands of the patients increase, you know, there are nurses that are out in the practice settings, out in communities, and those sickest patients will then end up in those acute care settings because so much more can be done as an outpatient now.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Andy, I wanted to ask you, I think there are probably people who are listening who are wondering, well, aren't there enough people applying for nursing schools? Is that the case? Are you seeing fewer people apply, for example, the graduate nursing program at SIU?
Not at all. Actually, the reverse would be true. I think the future of nursing is very exciting, and I think, you know, students or prospective students are seeing that. So, unfortunately, you know, we're doing our best, and I think we're doing a great job at SIU to train, but even though we're taking 280 new undergraduate nurses a year in our general programs and up to like 700 in our post-baccalaureate or post-RN to baccalaureate programs, it's still really not hitting at all the applications we're getting. The applications we're generally having to turn down, you know, a few hundred each year. And, you know, we're
trying to grow in these areas. Qualified? Those are a few hundred qualified candidates, Andy?
Yes.
Wow. And why is that?
Yeah. Well, you know, education and the systems and to educate students is very difficult. And obviously, I can't just take 500. If I get 500 applications, nurses and train them will. We want to make sure they're highly trained and ready to enter into the practice and be safe, great practitioners. And so that requires a pretty complex system of both classroom teaching, clinical-based, lab-based teaching, as well as clinical hospital teaching and clinical partners that we work with. And so, you know, it's a complex system that means we can't just take an open number. But again, we are working at creative ways to continue to grow and so we can meet the need of the upcoming years.
What would you need in order to train more nurses then? It sounds like you would need, it sounds like there needs to be a bigger infrastructure within the healthcare system? Do you think the healthcare system and the existing hospital system in Illinois is at capacity for training nurses, or is there room for more growth?
Well, of course, I'm an optimist. I always feel like there's always room for growth. But that is a limiting fact, not just for our school, but for all schools. I mean, if we have a hospital in a neighborhood that's serving several schools, we can only place so many nurses there for training. And so I think we're doing a lot, but I think we can get better. I think we can form stronger partnerships with, like OSF and with other hospital systems, stronger partnerships to grow opportunities for training nurses. And so, again, I think the options and the opportunities are there for growth, but, again, they're complex. It's not just, something we can turn on tomorrow. It's an exciting time, but yet a cautious time. We got to make sure that all the changes and all the growth we're making are made using a good practice in providing great training.
Julie, can you explain for us a little bit of how OSF Healthcare works, how the hospital systems, what kind of things nurses do who are training within your system?
Sure. We have two colleges of nursing within OSF Healthcare. We have a College of Nursing in Rockford, Illinois, and also in Peoria, Illinois. And our goal is definitely to hire as many new grad RNs as we can. And so as we look through that process, you have to balance the number of grads that you have are entering your programs, figure out how you can expand those programs in those colleges to increase our ability to have additional graduates, and then also how to balance those clinical rotations. We have partnerships with schools across Illinois and work very closely with them to do their clinical rotations in along with our own colleges of nursing. And so we're paying really close attention to how we balance those rotation opportunities within those clinical programs to ensure that we can say to our schools that are our partners, we need you to increase those numbers of nurses that you're bringing through your programs so that we can hire them.
And Julie, where do you see the greatest need? Are you seeing the greatest need for LPNs, for RNs? Where are you all seeing the greatest need for OSF Healthcare, for example?
I think bachelor's prepared RNs are our greatest need at this point. Looking forward, that's definitely a priority for OSF and for our nurses, and we want to make sure they have the opportunity to participate in getting their BSN if they don't have it now, or coming to us BSN prepared.
Dan, I wonder if you can explain for us, as president of the American Nursing Association, I know you're also a licensed nurse studying for your doctorate at UIC. When we're looking at the bachelor's level, what kind of work and what kind of preparation is required for someone who's meeting the needs of what Julie just talked about when we're thinking about new nurses and young nurses?
Right. So like most other baccalaureate programs, it takes 4 years to get a bachelor's of science in nursing, and there are also accelerated programs that for those individuals that have a previous bachelor's degree. So that'll, you'll get clinical education and then all those sciences, anatomy, physiology, chemistry, microbiology. And so that pipeline, that's why it is kind of a lengthy pipeline for developing nurses in the state of Illinois.
Andy, I imagine for your graduates at SIU, as we're hearing sort of what the landscape looks like, Julie began by talking about all of the different opportunities that particularly recent graduates have. What do you see at SIU? Where are those graduates going? Are they staying in Illinois?
Most of them are. Absolutely. They're staying in Illinois. And a high percent of our graduates will stay within one of the hospitals in our systems where they've trained just because familiarity that they have with those environments. So a lot of them stay there. But we've also managed, as she was just addressing, the need for more bachelor-prepared nurses. We also do a lot of online training for bachelor's level. Say a nurse has an RN associate's degree from our community colleges. We have a lot of agreements with our community colleges to allow for online training. So now we've really kind of spread out quite a bit. We got students from Oklahoma, from Wisconsin, from Minnesota, and to the tune of, like right now, 700 who are coming back as RNs but completing that bachelor's degree. So those those nurses themselves are generally staying in that same area where they're training, but we have kind of been able to create systems that can reach more. And the growth in that area has been over 1,000% for us in the last 2 years alone.
Wow. Okay. And Andy, I have to ask, as you think about, we've been talking about the way that nurses are being trained, are you satisfied with the current system for how we're training nurses? Do you think that we could be doing more?
Well, satisfied is a tricky word. I think we do a wonderful job. I think the Illinois schools are all doing very well at training, but satisfaction is a bad place to be. I think, you know, we've always got to be looking forward to more creative ways to train, more creative ways to provide opportunities, because that's what growing and moving forward is all about. So, again, a kind of a tricky question there, being satisfied. I don't think we can ever be satisfied. Another area that we have to look at is if we're trying to train more undergrad, if we're bachelor-level nurses, we've got to train more graduate-level nurses, too, to teach them. We need more educators, and that's another big growth area for us right now, is training nurse educators and through online training to provide more teachers for these nurses.
Julie, you mentioned nurses re-entering the workforce. I know we've been dealing with this nursing shortage in the U.S. for quite some time, and I know there's always been concern about nurses who burn out or leave the field and come back. How much of that is an issue as well?
I think it depends on the area, but from a re-entry to the workforce, I think it's around the strategy of making sure that you tap each layer of available nurse in our market and going out and talking to our nurses who maybe took some years off to be with their family and they're ready to come back to work. We have to be creative and strategic on how we educate and provide support structures to invite them back into the workforce. And whether they go back into ambulatory or bedside nursing at the hospital or want to look at home care opportunities, I think it's how we support them to re-enter the workforce and make sure that they're successful and having that platform for education.
Dan, can I ask you, as Julie and Andy, you're talking about all of this, you've worked in direct patient care. What do you think nurses do every day that people might not know about?
I think often the challenge is, you know, you see that image, you know the nurse is the one who's giving you that injection or the medication. But a lot of the work that nurses do, whether it's care coordination, making sure you're on the right medications by, you know, looking over and taking a look at your past medical history, and just coordinating maybe all the imaging you need to go for while you're in the hospital or if you need therapy, making sure you're in the right place and position for that.
Or nurse navigators who are there
Nurse navigators, yeah, for those, especially in oncology. A lot of that work sometimes isn't visible to the immediate public until you've been there in the hospital in an acute setting and seen it happening.
And so when we also think about the role of nurses, we just have about a minute before we take a break here, but Julie, I wonder if you could just sort of explain within the OSF system, how much work do we sort of see the proportion in a hospital system of nurses, work being done by nurses, say, versus doctors or other healthcare professionals?
I think there's a balance between all of these care partners, and the transition that we've seen over the years is that it's a partnership and they work across modalities and providing each support system in the group, that provider partner being a partner with that RN and with that PCT or CNA and MOA, and what that looks like in the different areas that you're providing care, and thinking about the patient through their entire experience. So really care coordination and making sure that we're paying attention to that full gamut of care, not just when they're in front of you at that moment. And I think that our nurses provide a huge role in that and making sure that we're looking at that full patient and their cycle through any touch on the healthcare system. And nurses are imperative to that.
We're going to take a break. When we continue this conversation about the nursing shortage in Illinois, what schools and hospitals and associations are doing to help solve that situation. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're talking about the nursing shortage in Illinois. Within the next 3 years, by 2020, The state of Illinois estimates we're going to have a nursing shortage of 21,000 people. We've been talking about this issue with a couple of folks who are on the line with me. Dan Freshkowski is president of the American Nursing Association of Illinois. He's also a licensed nurse who's studying for his doctorate at the UIC. From Southern Illinois University School of Nursing, their assistant dean for graduate programs, Andy Griffin, is with us as well. Julie Mueller's on the line with us from the hospital perspective, talking to us about OSF Healthcare Systems, where she's the director of recruitment. Dan, can I ask you, what are you hearing from other nurses in terms of what they need to do their jobs well?
I think depending on the setting you're in, sometimes you encounter challenges in maybe the skill mix of staff or also, you know, resources. I think the other challenge you have is fluctuating, you know, environments in terms of, you know, some you'll have as peak seasons in which you'll have travel nurses coming in or individuals leaving the state because other areas might have better opportunities. So I know that in a lot of those settings, there's a challenge when you know you have also, new, like Julie mentioned, you know, you'll have a large new graduate population, but those individuals also need well-experienced nurses to be able to educate and train them as they transition to practice. So those are just a few of the challenges nurses might see in terms of, and I hear in, you know, the practice in direct care.
And what do you think are particular challenges within Illinois? Do you think that we face particular challenges in recruiting or retaining nurses here throughout the state, Dan?
I've been told that, especially in some of the more rural parts of Illinois, it can be more challenging, whereas individuals really like to go to certain metropolitan areas. And as a strategy, a policy strategy, Illinois has, we have attempted to become part of a nurse licensure compact, which really helps expedite the licensing process for those 21 other states belong. And even say if you're bringing a nurse in from another who is a resident of Indiana, they need to then get licensed in the state of Illinois. And sometimes the challenge is that paperwork, just because the Illinois state budget and the government is so lately dysfunctional, it can take several months to bring in that nurse because he or she needs to be licensed in this state where they're practicing. So that's another challenge I think we hear about.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Dan, can I ask Andy, can I ask to Dan's point about nurses maybe picking larger cities like Chicago? I wonder if you find that your graduates do gravitate more towards Chicago or St. Louis versus the more rural areas or other parts of Illinois.
You know, in our case, since we're so close to St. Louis, a lot of them do gravitate, I believe, to the more urban area. If you're talking about undergraduate BSN level people, now I find a little bit possibly the opposite is true with some of our grad level nursing students, like the nurse anesthetists and the nurse practitioners we train, because there's such a high need in these rural areas. And I have St. Louis, you know, just to the west of here, you know, if I look east, I have a lot of rural land that direction. And I think a lot of our graduate nurses and our doctoral prepared nurses are going the rural direction. And we're trying to accommodate. They're trying to push that through different resources we're using to try to meet the need of those rural areas.
Yeah, how are you doing that?
Mm-hmm. How are we doing that? Mm-hmm. First of all, we push and set up a training system that places them there in training, because once again, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of nurses are going to go where they train. So instead of using the maybe a older traditional models of, you know, a graduate nurse or a nurse training just in the big hospitals, we're taking advantage of some of our rural health care hospitals or in, you know, many of our critical access hospitals and actually have them as clinical sites. So we have a series of, like, even in one program, we have several hundred sites when it comes down to it, but even an anesthesia program alone, we have like 35 different sites that our anesthesia students go to learn about nurse anesthesia, and they are include very many, and all of them have to go through rural anesthesia sites. So they learn what it's like to practice when you're more independent, more alone, and we think that in and of itself encourages students, you know, to see the need and to kind of get comfortable with that need, and hopefully we'll move in and to help meet those needs.
Andy, when we've talked about the shortage of primary care doctors or doctors in rural areas with your counterparts at SIU's medical school, I'm thinking in particular of conversations I've had with your dean. He emphasized the role that foreign-born doctors play in meeting that shortage. Is that true in nursing as well?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And then if you're talking about primary care, you know, the nurse practitioner is a huge growing group, and they are indeed, in many cases in the rural areas, are setting up their own clinical practices in their own, you know, doing all that they can to meet those needs. My wife is a nurse practitioner, and for several years she had her own clinical practice in a very small town in southern Illinois she would go to every day to help provide care there because there was no one else there.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of the of different immigrant populations, are we seeing more foreign-born nurses and coming here for training and staying here?
Oh, to that, I don't know that I can say that we see more right now in our area, in our school. That might be truer in some of the Chicago schools. I don't know that.
Dan,
really
what do you
changed.
Think about that?
You know, I think especially lately with changing federal policy, we generally are going to see fewer, I anticipate. We have a lot of nurses who become licensed in their home country and then take the licensure exam here. But I'd say for the most part, they'll come in after they're educated. But in the general, with, you know, changing federal policy and fewer visas for those workers and healthcare workers and other skilled individuals, I anticipate that that's not going to be as much of an option because we know the environment is changing at the federal level and regulation.
Julie, is that something that worries you from a recruitment standpoint or an employee standpoint at OSF Healthcare Systems, your ability to bring in, as we're talking about problems with just the numbers of the nursing shortage of nursing graduates who are here in the U.S., are you worried about your ability to bring in or have visas processing, whether those are H-1B visas for nurses here in to bring them into the U.S.?
Well, we are in the process, and we have been for several years, of focusing on our international recruitment plan, and we have opportunities for many, many nurses to join our organization, and it does take time. You have to get connected with those nurses across the countries and determine how they are going to enter the country. And we have successfully brought in probably in the last year probably 8, and are still working towards many, many more. It just all lies on their immigration status and their priority dates, and that's really what we're waiting for. So it's definitely a challenge. Timing-wise, but you have to really be diversified with your recruitment efforts and search to meet the needs of all of our facilities, and part of that is definitely international recruitment.
Andy, you are also a registered nurse. I wonder how you see the field evolving in the coming years. We've talked about the acute need. We've talked about more healthcare coverage. We haven't talked about the U.S. population continuing to age.
That's obviously a huge deal, you know, superimposed by the fact that we have more entering the healthcare system. The population is aging, and as we talked about earlier, there's more acute care in the hospital systems, but that also is still people seeking care in other areas. And if I'm saying what's going to be changing, what I'm seeing as a nurse, and in my case, I'm an advanced practice nurse and a nurse anesthetist, so you may hear me talk about nurse anesthesia a lot. What's changed in practice is that I'm seeing more needs in, areas that are not typical. Like if the hospital is doing the acute care, well, there's still the patient searching a procedure or needing something done now that is done more in the clinic base. And so there's more clinic-based needs. There's more surgery center needs as far as my own personal experience. So at one time, I was always thought about, I'm going to work in a hospital in my practice, and I'm going to, you know, do hospital-based nursing and do this. And now most of my nursing is done, you know, in the dental care clinics or in the office-based and things, because that's where people are searching for that entry-level care.
Well, a problem that's not going to be solved anytime soon, but it's good to hear what all of you are doing to help with that. I want to thank Julie Mueller, the Director of Recruitment from OSF Healthcare, joining us from Peoria. From Edwardsville, Andy Griffin is the Assistant Dean of Graduate Programs at SIU School of Nursing. And from Chicago, Dan Frichkowski, President of the American Nursing Association of Illinois. All of you, thanks so much for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thousands are expected to be gathering in Springfield this hour for a rally. At the top of the program, we spoke with one of the co-chairs of the Illinois Women March, Tracy Baim. Let's go now to IPR's Brian Mackey, who's with us outside the Capitol building as the crowds are gathering. We promised we'd check back in. Hey, Brian, how are you doing?
Hello, Nyla. How are you?
Good. What's the scene like? Originally, this is a march sponsored by 100 different progressive groups, right? From labor unions to women's, immigrant, LGBTQ rights groups. What's the scene like?
So far, there's a couple hundred people. I've heard that number, a few thousand expected, bandied about. Apparently, there are a lot of people still inside the Capitol building talking to lawmakers, pushing the issues you highlighted. A lot of like you said, liberal progressive issues, raising the minimum wage, pro-abortion rights, things along those lines. Right now, some of the speakers are talking to the media. The rally itself has not really started yet, though.
Right. That's not supposed to start for a little bit. Who are we expecting to hear from and see today, Brian?
Yeah, a number of Illinois politicians are going to be speaking. There's actually two separate events, a rally out on the street here outside in front of the Abraham Lincoln statue on the east steps of the Capitol building. We're going to hear from Senate President John Cullerton at that. The Reverend Jesse Jackson is here today, a number of other state politicians. And then at a separate event later inside the rotunda, there's going to be a march around the Capitol. People will go inside. At that point, we'll hear from additional Illinois politicians, including three of the Democratic candidates for governor, J.B. Pritzker, Daniel Biss, and Amaya Pawar.
Brian, I know it's early in the day, but do you have any sense of how this kind of crowd or what the energy is like compared to previous rallies and protests you've seen at the Capitol, especially in the past year when we've seen other people gather for the budget impasse?
Yeah, I mean, the last big one I think that I saw down here was, I can't even remember if it was a year or 2 years ago.
I think it was a year and a half ago, right? Yeah.
A big labor rally last spring. That was a lot bigger, but I should say that this is still early, and it does look like people are still kind of showing up to this. So I'm not going to be making any sort of final pronouncements on crowd size at this point. It looks like the early stages of a rally. The biggest other ones we've seen here have been for concealed carry gun rights. The gun lobbyists, when that was a bigger issue, would often have big rallies down here. So it's too early to say, I would say.
Right. And do you have a sense that people, are they carrying signs for lots of different issues? I know there's been, we've been talking about HB 40. There was a vote on that also. I don't know if that's happened yet today as well.
It had not when I left the Capitol, which was about 20 minutes ago. So I don't actually know when that would be. I'm just looking at some of the signs walking past me now. I see references to Nasty Woman, which, of course, kind of became a meme during the campaign last year. A number of other things. You're testing the limits of my glasses here, though, to try and see these signs.
All right. Well, we will wait for you. I will anxiously await your tweets and your pictures, Brian. How about that?
Sounds good, Nyla.
Okay. That is IPR's State House correspondent, Brian Mackey, with us. Of course, you will hear all of his reports later today about this Women's March in Springfield that's about to kick off. Brian, thanks for being with us. I appreciate it.
Happy to talk to you.
That does it for us today. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we're going to be speaking with reporter Chris Kjærgaard from the Peoria Journal-Star about the history of Caterpillar. He's also going to give us the latest in the ongoing federal investigation and the relocation of the company's global headquarters to Chicago after more than 90 years in Peoria. Plus, we're going to be checking in with foster care agencies in Illinois that say that despite receiving funding throughout the budget impasse, there are important gaps that remain in services for the most vulnerable in our state, abused and neglected children. So stay tuned to tomorrow's program for that. You can always find past shows on the NPR One app. Search for The 21st. We're also available on iTunes and Android. And if you have Alexa and the NPR One app enabled, we're easy to find. Tell Alexa, ask NPR One to play The 21st. All of those links, directions for Alexa, every other way to contact us. If you want to leave us a voicemail, send us an email, follow us on social media. It's all at our website, 21stshow.org. We're produced by Christine Herman and Alan Montesilio. Abaral Hiti is our intern. Technical direction comes from Jason Croft with help from Steve Mork. Scott Cameron is our executive editor. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.